Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. It's July 1st, 2013, and this is episode 377. It certainly doesn't seem like 2 years since Google Plus was launched, but last Saturday, on June 29, we celebrated Google Plus's second birthday with a photo walk here in Tokyo. And I ended up with 21 photos from the day and have selected 10 to talk about with regards to my thinking behind the photos and also fill you in on the day as we go along. I've uploaded my 21 shots to the event photo gallery on Google Plus, and I've also uploaded them to my own Google Plus gallery if you're interested in taking a look. If you don't follow me on Google Plus already, then you can find me at mbp.ac/gplus, that's G-P-L-U-S, or you can come on, follow along with the images on the blog post for today, which is at mbp.ac/377, or of course, if you're listening in iTunes or your iPhone, then the images are all embedded in the enhanced podcast as well. Let's jump into it though, and I wanted to start by noticing that because I want to put out a podcast on this walk today, just 2 days after the walk, I won't be making a final decision as to whether or not any of these photos will end up as long-term keepers, as the emotional connection with the day is still too strong. I've got a feeling that a few might make it, but a number of them definitely won't. I'm certainly happy enough with the shots to talk about these 10 today though, especially when you consider that this is really just a bit of fun. If I can make anything worth keeping out of a day like Saturday, that's just an added bonus. So we started at the Tokyo Sky Tree, and that's a new broadcasting tower that was completed in March 2011, and has just started to broadcast its signal out to the Tokyo area. It replaces the wonderfully characteristic Tokyo Tower that for me, as for many, will probably remain one of the iconic structures symbolizing Japan's economic growth as they rebuilt the country after World War II. Tokyo Tower isn't going away yet. It's going to remain open and you'll be able to travel to the top in the elevator for a while yet. And it's just that there have been so many high-rise buildings built around the Tokyo area that it's, the relatively small Tokyo Tower at 303 meters or 1,093 feet was no longer able to broadcast to the entire area. So there were some parts of Tokyo without a proper digital TV signal. Anyway, I arrived at about 10 a.m., 30 minutes before the meeting time, as I'd left early enough for the trains to run a little late, which they didn't, but my plan was to walk around the tower trying to find some interesting angles if I had enough free time before we started. This first image is one of a few of the sky tree that I've uploaded, and here I'd found a spot where the tower was reflected in the windows over an elevated passageway between the tower and the adjacent shopping area, etc. I lined up the shot so that the reflection kind of completed the tower. So, it looks as though you're looking up at like an open railing rather than a set of windows. I used Nik Software's Silver Effects Pro 2 to convert to black and white for a couple of reasons. Firstly, I love black and white skies. They always seem much more dramatic than a straight colour shot, and I also just like black and white architecture. I found over the years that the majority of the Tokyo architecture shots that I've made, they just look better to me in black and white. This is also true of old black and whites, all black and white photos, I'm sure, but removing the colour also just seems to help for us to see the structure and the form of the subject without the added colour information, which often can be distracting. I was also conscious here of the amount of roof that I placed on the right side, And that patch of textured siding at the bottom, I just wanted to give them weight and basically minimizing the space for the tower and the sky to add a little bit of drama to the photo. After photographing the sky tree alone for a while, I went around to the meeting point and found a good-sized crowd already gathered. I met a few friends that I'd not seen in person since the first anniversary walk a year ago, and there were a lot of new faces. Remembering names was going to be difficult, and I'm terrible with names at the best of times. I found the registration queue and I let them know that I was there, paid my money for the boat ride that we'd go on later, the entrance fee to the Hamariku, and that's a park that we would visit, and most importantly, my $40 for the party that we'd have when the walk had finished. I was given a sticker with my Google Plus profile photo and name on it, and a map, and that contained all of the key times and meeting places for the walk and, you know, where we needed to go, and a Google camera strap, which was actually quite cool. We had a steady walk around and shot the tree some more before starting to walk towards the Asakusa area. We passed through a small park, in a small corner of which is the Ushima Shrine, and we were lucky enough to find a wedding ceremony in progress, as we can see here. I switched between aperture priority and manual exposure modes throughout the day, still trying to get used to aperture priority, which I had set when I shot this image. I had auto ISO set to give the camera more wiggle room, and with plus 2/3 exposure compensation for this shot, the camera set my ISO to 1000 with a shutter speed of 1/80 of a second at f4. I had added a little bit of exposure compensation to stop this from going dark, but I didn't need much. I have to admit that I didn't even notice that the guy in this shot had a Mohican, which I thought was quite cool, to say the rest of the wedding still seemed to be very traditional. We can also see the Shinto priest wafting his onusa, which is like a wand with paper streamers on it, to purify the happy couple. We heard from the Shinto priest that blessed us during our Winter Wonderland tour here in Japan this year, that bad spirits are sucked into the paper on the onusa and then sent on their way, removing them from the people being blessed. We had to shoot this from outside, of course, and as my longest lens for the day was the 24-70, I had to crop just a little bit from around the edges here to clean it up. And note too that I used the new upright feature in Lightroom 5 to straighten the vertical lines, and it worked like a charm with just one click. Next up, we see Shuhei Yagishita, a Tokyo Plusser, jumping for us on a wall in front of the sky tree. It was a relatively narrow wall, but luckily there wasn't much of a drop on the other side, as I had visions of him doing a duchimin on us as we, you know, I first saw him climb up there. He was a great sport though, and he jumped a few times on request. I liked the leg positions and the dynamism in this frame. Note that with the black and white conversion here, I didn't go as dark with the sky as I usually do, because Shuhei had a black shirt on, and we'd lose that separation if the sky was too dark as well. It would have been great if we could have done this with, you know, if there was a big fluffy cloud behind his upper body too, but we didn't have that luxury on this day. By this point, it was 2:30, and we would now have a couple of hours of free time to go and get lunch in the Asakusa area, and I found this next scene under the highway as we headed over. This was actually quite a colourful store and the first of these images that I considered leaving in colour, but as I worked through my set, I found myself with so many photos that would be black and white, I started to really want to do the entire set in black and white. I processed each of them individually using various settings and various colour filters and color channel tweaks to emphasize or de-emphasize colors depending on the photo. Note too that as this was under a highway, the only light in the scene was that which was pouring in from the left of the frame. So I reduced the highlights in the highlight slider in Lightroom a little to minus 18, and then reduced the highlights again in Silver FX Pro, and basically to tone down the light on the side there. That all left side was slightly overexposed in my original. This was one of those times when I turned on the under-exercised street photographer in me and fought my anxiety to ask permission for a photo. Although I've started to enjoy this type of photography over the last couple of years, I still don't give it enough time to really get comfortable with this. And as far as I understand, many people never really get over the anxiety of walking up to strangers and asking them if it's okay to photograph them. It makes it a lot easier, of course, when you speak the language, though. And although this gentleman looked quite stern as I approached him, I smiled and said hello and knelt down so that I wasn't looking down at him and asked if it would be okay if I could photograph him. And adding that, just to sort of soften the situation, adding that his beard was absolutely incredibly cool, and I really did think that. I shot two frames and then showed him them on the camera, and his face lit up, so I shot a couple more, and this was the second to last frame as he blinked in the last photograph. I found that he was a local living in the area, and just a very quick conversation, then I thanked him and moved on. I entered the street of old stores that runs up to the Sensoji Temple from the side, just past the middle, and started to make my way up to the main temple. The Google film crew stopped and videoed me standing in the middle of the crowds for a while, but despite our group being over 80 strong, once I'd left the video crew, I didn't see another person from our photo walk group until I made my way to the afternoon meeting point at around 2:30, which would be about half an hour or so after this shot from inside the main Sensoji temple building. I didn't see any no photography signs, and none of the officials asked me to stop, so being somewhat respectful that this is a place of worship, I shot a handful of images like this. If you've ever been to a large shrine or temple like this in Japan, though, you'd know that they aren't quite the same as religious buildings in most other countries. Although the Japanese they'll throw their coins into the, and I do this as well, but you know, we throw coins into the box at the front of the area where the main ceremonies are held, and then clap your hands to sort of alert the gods that you're about to tell them what you'd like to wish for or pray for. You hold your hands together and you pray for a while, and it's just not as serious as most countries, for want of a better word. I mean, it may be sullen works better, but many Japanese, they visit this kind of shrine as part of a tourist day, a day trip, and they'll probably, they'll visit many locations. And although the locals of the area are probably very serious about the fact that they live next to this major shrine, and they probably have a lot of spirituality attached, for many here it's just another stop, something to tick off before they move on to see the next Tokyo site. Again, in aperture priority, at f11 for a deep depth of field, my ISO jumped up to 8,000 here, for a 30th of a second, but the 5D Mark III ensured that there wasn't too much grain in the shot. This also allowed me to capture all of the beautiful detail in the roof of this building, the ceiling, that I honestly had never really noticed before. There is always so much light pouring into these places from the doors, the sides of the building. The ceiling usually appears very dark to us, so this was a fresh look at the building for me. After Sensoji, I headed back around to the banks of the Sumida River where we were to meet, and half the group would ride the water bus to Hamarikyu, a park that we'd walk around later in the afternoon. They call it water bus, water taxi. It's basically a boat. The meeting time was 2:30, which seemed a little overcautious when I realized that, you know, our boat wouldn't leave until 3:20, but I got there on time and chatted with others as I waited. This photo that I'm showing now was shot from the roof of our boat as we pulled away from the pier. By now, the light was further around the sky tree, so the sun, basically moving around across the sky, of course, meant that unlike the earlier shots, it was now easier to capture the metallic surface and all the detail of the sky tree. The other reason that I shot this, of course, is because Himiko, the futuristic boat to the left, had entered the picture. Himiko was designed by Reiji Matsumoto, a Japanese anime and manga artist, behind the space battleship Yamato story and a plethora of other space adventures. I find it fascinating and incredibly cool that Japanese society, often considered very serious and staid, would commission an artist to design and create a boat like this. I think it's probably things like this that help to keep the Japanese sane in their otherwise often very restrictive lifestyles. The sail along the river to the Hamarikyu Gardens was nice, with most of the group on top of the boat, and as we set off, a Google video crew had set up on one of the first bridges that we'd sail under, and we all waved and cheered for the camera as we approached. They were filming on the boat amongst us too, with wide-angle lenses extended out on monopods, swinging them over our heads. I'm quite looking forward to seeing the video, and I'm hoping that it doesn't turn out to be just a promotional video for one of their recommended pluses like last year's video. I don't see that happening this year, though. They didn't seem to be focusing on any one person, which was great. I got a few shots from Hamarikyu, but this is a difficult spot to work. It's very Japanese in some ways and has great contrast with the towering architecture behind the park, but I've never really been able to get anything spectacular there. I spent most of the afternoon walking around with a guy named Camilo Medina, a talented photographer living here in Tokyo, and I was enjoying the conversation as much as the photography. So if you're listening, thanks for the afternoon, Camilo. It was a lot of fun. We walked through the city a little more, then got onto the Oedo train line for a few stops over to Azabujuban. Then walked for about 15 minutes from there to the Roppongi Hills, where Google Japan is based. They'd kindly used their superpowers to get us press passes to the sky deck on the roof of the Mori Tower, the huge cylindrical building there, and we were given permission to use tripods, which was great. As the sun drew close to the horizon, this first shot is before the city lights really started to come on. You can see from the blur in the clouds that this was a long exposure, but it was only 30 seconds. This was one of the first that I did, but although I tried to go longer, there weren't many places where you could get a really clear view out over the city with wide-angle lenses, but, you know, without getting the railings around the deck in the bottom of the shot. The best place that I found was where the resident photographers stood people for their tourists, sort of, I've been to the sky deck photo, and there were people that kept coming down on the left side of that same spot, so timing was really difficult. I'm happy with this shot, mind. It was, you know, basically I shot with the camera pointing further up than I wanted to avoid people's heads. It allowed me to get some nice sky movement in, though, and we can see out to the sea in the distance, showing that Tokyo is very much a port town, though people don't really think of it that way. As the city lights came up, I shot this next image, which is just a 6 second exposure, no longer using a neutral density filter as I was for the last shot. I wanted to go longer, but the obstructions were stopping me. And although there were times when I could get a clear view, there was a family that came out on the deck and their kids were jumping up on the rail, the handrail, and then, you know, time and again, just jumping back down onto the wooden deck on which we were standing. This, of course, meant that during my long exposures, the deck would shake and my shot was ruined, so I gave up on the longer exposures. Again, though, I'm happy with this shot. Probably another that I had a hard time converting to black and white, but I like the way increasing the red and orange channels enabled me to make Tokyo Tower stand out as it does here. We can also see the red tail lights of the cars streaming along the highways that weave through the city too. Plus, the shorter exposure enabled me to tilt the camera down a little more, shooting between people going down there, and this enabled me to get the curve of the highway in, which I think adds a nice touch, kind of forming a circle around Tokyo Tower. I love driving through the city at this time of night and have driven around the tower on that road many times, so it was nice to get a shot from this perspective, thanks to Google. Although it would have been nice to stay out on the deck for about another 15 minutes, we were being called in and were already late for the party that had been planned, so we made our way back down. And as I approached the last meeting point, I noticed a whole bunch of pluses reflected in some glass roofing over the area that we were supposed to be meeting in. So I got this last shot for the day, looking up at the Mori Tower. To deal with the low light here, this was shot at ISO 6400 at f2.8 for 1/25th of a second. If you're wondering why it's all sharp at f2.8, note that I shot this with my 16-35mm lens at 17mm, and at 17mm the hyperfocal distance at f2.8 is 3.4 meters or 11 feet, with a near focus starting at 11.7 meters or 5.6 feet, so I was safe to go this wide. And if that last sentence just confused the hell out of you, stay tuned for an exciting announcement shortly. I've got something for you that will help with that. The party after this last meeting was a lot of fun, with great conversation with Camilo and Brian Kemper, another Tokyo-based photographer who's just a laugh a minute. The beer flowed, somewhat hindered by the sheer numbers of our group keeping the waitresses really busy, but a great evening was had by all. A great day, in fact. Any of you that follow me on Google+ will know that it's where I spend most of my social media time now. That's not a lot of time, but of the time that I do spend in social media, these days I'm probably on G+ 95% of that time, and with maybe 3% on Twitter and 2% on Facebook. The thing that I enjoy about Google+ is that it's shaped up into a real community, a photography-centric community in many respects. So I really enjoy spending time there when I have time to go online and share or look at others' work or what they're posting about. The other thing, of course, is that enables us to bring that online community into the real world as we did for this photo walk. It's only the third I've been on, and it was a year since my last. But it's great to be able to jump on a train and go and meet some of the people that we interact with online. And I'm sure it's like this in every city around the world. If you haven't gotten involved with Google+ yet, jump right in and have some fun. And maybe you'll consider joining the MBP community as well while you're there. Our conversation's getting more lively by the week, so I'll put a link to that into the show notes, and it'll be great to see you there. So before we finish though, I have some really exciting news to share with you, and that is that my second ebook from Craft and Vision, Sharp Shooter, Proven Techniques for Sharper Photographs, was released last week and is now available from the Craft and Vision website. We start by covering what makes an image sharp in the first place, hyperfocal distance, as I just mentioned, all of that stuff, and then I cover some hand-holding techniques, stabilization for long lenses and focus stacking, among other things. And we also go into sharpening in post when it didn't quite work out. And I also go into sharpening for final output. I wrote a blog post to introduce you to the book and give you some more details, which you can find at mbp.ac/sharp if you're interested in that. And remember that these books are, although they're incredible value at just $5 a pop, for those of you that pick up this podcast episode really quickly, if you use the promotional code SHARP4 when you check out, you'll only pay $4. Or use the code SHARP20 to get 20% off your purchase when you buy 5 or more products from the Craft and Vision Library. These codes expire at 11:59 p.m. PST on July 4th, 2013. So it's just a few days from now. If you miss that, it's still only $5. So, you know, it's not a lot of money. And if you sign up for my newsletters with the buttons on my blog, then you'll also receive an email when I release any future books like this. So you won't miss the dollar off in the future. I'm really excited to get my second book into the Craft and Vision system, though, and I really do hope that you enjoy it if you pick up a copy. Thanks for listening today, and remember that you can find me on Google+ and Twitter, you know, that 3%, and links to everything that I'm up to are on the top page at martinbaileyphotography.com, so do drop by and take a look. I'll be back next week with another episode, but in the meantime, you take care and have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.